Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, text number 26. Do we read the verse together? How's this work? Everyone just uses their phone? Oh. Om Agant Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Nena Tasmai Shri Kuruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavishtam Stapitam Nena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpataruvyasya Kripa Sindhu Virevacha Patita nam bhavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Gautamrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Janma dhyasa yuton vayandita rata sharate shabhi gyaswara tene brahma hridaya radhika vaye muyanti yasuraya tejo varim ritam yata vinimayo yatra trisarko mrisha dhamna svena satana rasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvati vyasam tato jayam udirayat nashapraesha padreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatu tamashloke bhaktir bhaviti nashtiki 1-26 vamukshavo bhoro rupan Hitwa Bhutapatin Ata Narayana Kala Shanta Vajanti Hanasuyava Namukshavo Goro Rupan Hitwa Bhutapatin Ata Narayana Kala Shanta Hajanti Hanasuyava
Amen.
to wear many also.
Yes.
Mamukshavaha.
Mamukshavaha.
Persons desiring liberation.
Koda.
Horrible, ghastly. Rupan. Forms like that. Hitwa. Rejecting. Bhutapatin. Demigods. Ata. For this reason. Narayana.
The personality of Godhead.
Pala. Plenary portion. Shanta.
All blissful.
Vajanti.
Do worship.
He. Certainly. Anasu Yavaha. Non envious. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki. Translation: those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Purport: the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is the original person of the Vishnu categories, expands himself into different categories, namely integrated plenary portions and separated parts and parcels. The separated parts and parcels are the servitors, and the integrated plenary portions of Vishnu Tattvas are the worshipful objects of service. All demigods who are empowered by the Supreme Lord are also separated parts and parcels. They do not belong to the categories of Vishnu Tattva. The Vishnu Tattvas are living beings equally as powerful as the original form of the personality of Godhead, and they display different categories of power in consideration of different times and circumstances. The separated parts and parcels are powerful by limitation. They do not have unlimited power like the Vishnu Tattvas. Therefore, one should never classify the Vishnu Tattvas or the plenary portions of Narayana, the personality of Godhead, in the same categories with the parts and parcels. If anyone does so, he becomes at once an offender by the name Harshandi. In the age of Kali, many foolish persons commit such unlawful offenses and equalize the two categories. The separated parts and parcels have different positions in the estimation of material powers, and some of them are like Kala Bhairava, Shmashana, Bhairava, Shani, Mahakali, and Chandika. These demigods are worshipped mostly by those who are in the lowest categories of the modes of darkness or ignorance. Other demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Surya, Ganesha, and many similar deities are worshipped by man in the mode of passion, urged on by the desire for material enjoyment. But those who are actually situated in the mode of goodness, Sattva-guna, of material nature, worship only Vishnu Tattvas. Vishnu Tattvas are represented by various names and forms, such as Narayana, Dhamodhara, Bhamana, Govinda, and Adhokshaja. The qualified Brahmanas worship the Vishnu Tattvas represented by the Shalagram Shila, and some of the higher castes, like the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, also generally worship the Vishnu Tattvas. Highly qualified Brahmanas situated in the mode of goodness have no grudges against the mode of worship of others. They have all respect for other demigods, even though they may look ghastly, like Kala Bhairava or Mahakali. They know very well that these horrible features of the Supreme Lord are all different servitors of the Lord under different conditions, yet they reject the worship of both horrible and attractive features of the demigods, and they concentrate only on the forms of Vishnu because they are serious about liberation from the material conditions. The demigods, even to the stage of Brahma, the supreme of all the demigods, cannot offer liberation to anyone. Hiranyakashipu underwent a severe type of penance to become eternal in life, but his worshipful deity Brahma could not satisfy him with such blessings. Therefore, Vishnu and none else is called Muktipada, or the personality of Godhead who can bestow upon us mukti, liberation. The demigods, being like other living entities in the material world, are all liquidated at the time of the annihilation of the material structure. They are themselves unable to get liberation, and what to speak of giving liberation to their devotees. The demigods can award the worshippers some temporary benefit only and not the ultimate one. It is for this reason only that the candidates for liberation deliberately reject the worship of the demigods, although they have no disrespect for any one of them. Srila Prabhupada ki. I'd like to first seek the blessings of all the devotees. It's very difficult to speak in a new community. You feel like you have to perform and entertain because people are not adjusted to you and you're not adjusted to the audience. So I'm a little nervous, which is uncharacteristic for my personality because I'm a little puffed up. But it's quite humbling to be in front of Vaishnavas, especially who know the philosophy, so you can't bluff them as effectively as you bluff others. So I'm seeking the blessings and well wishes. I'd like to especially thank Mother Akadashi Bhatta, who made this arrangement and who is encouraging me to do this seva, even though it's a little scary. Also, blessings from all the Prabhupada disciples. This is what makes it a little bit more scary, actually. Speaking before this thing, followers of Srila Prabhupada. So if I can get some blessings from everyone, I need to see a right hand. Thank you very much. So we're in the first canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. The first chapter presents six questions given by Shonaka Rishi. And these questions and answers constitute the topic of the entire Bhagavatam, according to Acharyas. So Shonaka Rishi asks six questions. First question is, what is the ultimate welfare for all of humanity? Second question, you remember those? What is the essence of suddenness presented in Shastra, by which by which complete auspiciousness can be obtained or actualized? Then the third question is, what is the purpose for Krishna's appearance from Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva? Fourth question, anyone remembers? What are the magnanimous acts of Krishna? Fifth question, what are the avatars of Krishna? What are the different avatars in the stories of Krishna? And sixth question, when Krishna disappears from the world, where has Dharma taken shelter? So from Shonaka Rishi's questions, it can be understood that he's interested in Krishna. Or other six questions are directly about Krishna. And according to Acharyas, the first two questions are also implicitly about Krishna. Because ultimate welfare and the means by which that can be attained can be easily actualized simply by hearing about Krishna. So in the very beginning of chapter 2, when Sutta Goswami begins his answer, in the first verse he says he wants to honor this question. And then he honors the question in verse number 5 by glorifying the question itself. That's a very nice verse, actually. 1, 2, 5. Anyone remember that verse? Munayo sadhu prishto ham babato lokamangala prita. Yeah, of course. So here in this question, he's honoring their question. He says, I want to honor this question. So he honors it by glorifying the question. And he says, this question itself is sadhu. This is very good. The reason he gives is because it is lokamangalam. It brings auspiciousness to the whole world. So he's saying this question itself can give ultimate welfare. This is, in a sense, an indirect way of answering the first question. The question itself gives ultimate welfare. So why do you say like this? Ya krita krishna samprashna. Because it is a question about Krishna. Yenatma supersedati. And this question itself gives satisfaction. They ask, what is the essence of all advice by which atma supersedati can be experienced? So he's saying the question itself gives atma supersedati. In fact, in a lot of sense, our day, and Prabhupada writes about this in the paragraph, in the purport. If you consider what is human existence in general, it is just a set of questions and answers. And I have a little maxim that I like to say, that evolution of being, or evolution of inquiry precedes evolution of being. If you want to advance your being, you have to advance your question. So, of course, in modern times, because of especially technology, social media, we don't have very advanced questions most of the time. We want to know what happened in season 8 of Game of Thrones, or we're asking about a football game, or we're asking, how are you, which is also not considered a very nice question for sadhus. So, And of course, we get a certain knowledge by those sorts of inquiries, but that is not a type of knowledge by which we can transform ourselves. But if you ask a question about Krishna, the knowledge that comes from that question can purify the heart and give transformation. So the question itself gives auspiciousness, or it can actualize Atma Supersiddhi. So therefore, all the questions are about Krishna, and all the answers about Krishna, Krishna Bhakti, and Krishna Prema. Because this is a way by which one can actually experience happiness. So in developing his treatise on Krishna Bhakti in this chapter, he establishes that pure bhakti is the means by which one can achieve Krishna Prema. I think that is the verse, Vai Pungsa Paro Dharma Yato Bhakti Rajokshuja. So he says, by Paro Dharma, by the dharma of pure bhakti, one can achieve bhakti. Because the goal of bhakti is bhakti. By, what is that verse? I can't think of the verse now. So, Bhaktir, oh, I can't think of the verse. From 11th Canto, chapter 2, verse number 31. I don't know. Anyone? Someone? Yeah, Bhaktir Sajayate Bhaktir. Yeah, Bhaktir Sajayate Bhaktir. Yeah, this line. So from bhakti comes bhakti. So he's describing that the ultimate welfare is pure bhakti, and the means to that pure bhakti is pure bhakti also. Sadhana bhakti leads to bhav bhakti, prema bhakti. This is the idea here. So having established that in verses 16 through 21, he establishes how this pure bhakti blossoms from shraddha to prema. And shraddha, of course, begins from the association of sadhus. Krishna bhakti jamamula hai sadhu sangha. That is the start of Krishna consciousness. You get the seed of faith, and then how that blossoms into prema, that is discussed in 5 or 6 verses. And then he wants to say that this bhakti is actually only meant for the Supreme Lord. It is only meant for the forms of the Supreme Lord. This bhakti is not meant for anyone else. Nowadays, like many words that have been hijacked from Eastern tradition, you have karma, yoga, mantra. So bhakti is becoming an increasingly popular word that is being hijacked by the modern world. And a part of that is very wonderful. People are becoming more familiar with bhakti tradition, but a lot of it is also scary, because what ends up happening is that they digest the word in a certain way, where all the good stuff is left out and only the bad stuff is kept, or misconceptions are kept. So now when people say bhakti, they talk about bhakti to their yoga mat. I've heard such things also. They talk about devotion to the yoga mat, or devotion to, of course, humanity, devotion to justice or social justice, devotion to, of course, family, devotion to my dog. And they equate all of these things to bhakti. They said this is all bhakti. So therefore, Bhagavatam has to make a clarification that this bhakti that we're speaking of only has one object. That object is Krishna, or the forms of Shuddha Sattva. So in the very previous verse, to verse 26, this is the precise point that is being made. That, Bejire munayo atagre bhagavantama dokshaja sattvam vishudam kremaya kalpante anutaniha. So this bhakti is done for the Supreme Lord, bhagavantama dokshaja sattvam vishudam, because his form is shuddha sattva. So bhakti is itself also part of the spiritual world. This is what makes bhakti a little bit hard to understand. It is an aspect of the internal energy. So it only has as its object something that is of the same nature. It doesn't have as its object something that is different from its nature. So therefore it only has Krishna, who has a form of Vishuddha Sattva. And those in this world who follow the examples of sadhus who perform bhakti for these forms of Vishuddha Sattva, then they can attain ultimate welfare. So this is the point that is being established, that this devotion is meant for the form of the Supreme Lord. So in this verse, it's saying, Mukshava Ghora Rupam Hitva Bhuta Patanata. For this reason, for the reason that those in this world, they attain, they follow the example of devotees, or sadhus. The word used here is munayo. Those in this world follow the example of munis and do bhakti to the form of the Lord. For this reason, those who desire liberation, a mukshava, they give up the ghastly forms of the Bhutapatan. Now the word Bhutapatan refers to It refers to the devatas here. That's how the purport is being described here. But it specifically means the forms that are composed of the gunas of nature. And because their tendency is to direct our affections towards objects of this world, because they are easily perceivable, and they're easily, it's easy to invest energy in that which can be seen, not that which is adokshada, as mentioned here. So they give up these ghastly forms of the Buddha potent. Now, there are some examples of ghastly forms that I'm not familiar with. Kali and Vajra, Bhairava, Kala Bhairava, and all these different forms. I have not seen. I think the closest I've seen is the Indiana Jones movie when I was a youth, and they were like drinking blood from skulls and stuff like that. But of course, we hear about these things in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are considered ghastly forms of the material nature. But Prabhupada is also mentioning even the more beautiful forms of Sattvaguna, like the forms of Lord Brahma and Surya and Ganesh. All these forms are given up as objects of devotion. Why? Precisely because they are forms of the material nature, the gunas. And if you direct your affections towards forms of the gunas, then you will become trapped by the world of the gunas. This is the idea here. So giving up those forms, Narayana Kala Shanta Vajanti, they worship only the Narayana Kala Shanta, the forms of Narayana, the Supreme Lord. Anasuyava, they have no envy for these other forms. So when devotees are speaking a little bit strongly about devotion not being aimed at humanity, not being aimed at your family, or not being aimed at your dog, or not being aimed at your yoga mat, it's not that they have, as we say in our youth, it's not that they have beef with these things. You know, they don't have any problem. You can worship. If you want to worship your family, then you will get the result of that. If you want to worship your dog, you will get the result of that worship. And just like, I think one time there's a story there where Prabhupada was giving class and he was talking about going to the lower species, and one person raised his hand and said, Srila Prabhupada, I want to become a dog. And Prabhupada said, I give you full blessing. So this is an example of anasuyava, no envy. I know if you want to become a dog, then you can become a dog also, if that is your desire. But as far as clarification of what is the true object of bhakti, it is only the Supreme Lord Narayana. He is the only true form of devotion. So this is how Prabhupada develops his purport here. In the first paragraph, he is saying that the Supreme Lord has two types of expansions, the Swamsha expansions and the Vibhinaksha expansions. The Swamsha expansions means those who are the personality of God in himself. And the Vibhinaksha expansions are the jivas. Now the jivas who come in the category of this Vibhinaksha expansion, there's a large spectrum of them from the lower species of life to the celestials, but they are all jivas. And as jivas, they are meant to render service to the Swamsha expansions, the Narayana Kalashanta. They are meant for serving the Supreme Lord. So they are not proper objects of devotion. That is the idea here. Now, the tendency is to worship those who can fulfill our desires very quickly. And Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also mentions that people worship the devatas because very quickly their desires become fulfilled. But they are described as having little intelligence because the fruits that they can get from these devatas are temporary. This verse is coming out today. Now, those whose knowledge is stolen by lust, then they choose as their object of worship the devatas, prapadyante anya devata. Of course, in Vedic culture, devatas meant like what we're hearing here. In modern times, I would say it means like the Kim Kardashians and Beyonce, and these are the devatas for Trump, for some people, or whatever it may be. Huh?
Bernie Sanders.
And these are the modern devatas. Because they feel that they can get their desires fulfilled very quickly by worshiping these persons. Tam tam niyamam astaya pakritta niyatasvaya. Who do they choose as the object of their so-called devotion? They choose as the object of their devotion someone who is like them. Pakritta niyatasvaya means someone who is in the same mode as them. So they choose, if you're in the mode of ignorance, then you choose someone who is also similar. Like now this type of rap is there, call it mumble rap. And they literally mumble and they make millions of dollars. And people choose these persons as objects of devotion, they esteem them. Or you're in the mode of passion and you choose I don't know who's a good example from the modern world. You choose Lord Brahma if you're in Vedic culture, and if you're in modern demonic culture, you choose Beyonce or whoever. And if you're in the mode of goodness, it's very rare, if you're in the mode of goodness, then Prabhupada is saying here, they choose only the forms of Narayana as the object of devotion. So the separated parts and parcels are meant for rendering service to the Supreme Lord. They're not meant for rendering service to their these forms of the gunas of material nature. Precisely because they cannot give liberation. So mamukshava means those who are interested in liberation. So what to speak of those who are interested in devotion? Even those who are interested in liberation, they only worship these forms. So therefore, what to speak of devotees? They only worship the forms of Godhead because they're only interested in devotion. They're not interested in liberation. So the main idea that could be sussed out from this is who is the true object of devotion? I think in devotional communities, because we live conventional lives also, we can suffer from a sort of psychological atheism. Prabhupada is mentioning here that those who equate the Godhead with the jivas, then they're called as pashandi, they're called as atheists. So devotees, I know many of us, we feel very confident that we're not atheists because we believe in Krishna and we worship him. But sometimes you can be philosophically theist, but psychologically atheist in terms of your lifestyle. And I don't know how many of you have maybe experienced this as practicing devotees. Where we are philosophically, we are devotee. So if anyone asks us who is the true object of devotion, we will say Krishna, because we know how to give the right answer. But when it comes to our actual mental culture, what we're thinking about, what we're doing in our particular activities, then we may discover that our activities are not dissimilar from those who do not believe in Krishna and who would take these forms of nature as their object of devotion. So as practitioners, we experience a sort of psychological atheism, and that is not easy to break, because especially in our culture, for example, especially in our ISKCON culture, we learn about the importance of things like yukta vairagya. So things can be used in Christian service. So we're not to renounce those things because they can be used in Christian service. But we all know they can be used in Christian service. That's never been the issue. The question is, how are we using those particular objects? But we accept that eventually we will use those objects in Krishna service. So we don't take it as a danger to our devotion. Similarly, when we're serving our families, for example, our families are devotees. So rendering service to the family is rendering devotion also. But there's a side of our connection with our families that is devotional, and there's a side that is conventional. And keeping the balance between those two so that the devotion gets the edge can be a hard balance. Of course, I don't know exactly because I'm not very attached to my family and I don't have a wife or anything like that. But I observe, and of course I can see how with my own mother, let's say, for example, that, okay, they are a devotee, therefore my service to them is also devotion to Krishna, which is a true statement. But you have the statement from Mother Kunti when she's praying to Krishna to cut her attachment to the family. Sneha Pashtam Iman Chindi, what is that word? Iman Pandishu Krishnishu. She prays to Krishna to cut her attachment to the family. So commentators give explanation there. Well, they are the great devotees. If you cut your relationship to them, then you're cutting your relationship to Krishna. So how do you reconcile this? So the answer that is given is that, yes, I don't want to cut my devotional relationship with the Pandavas and Rishnis. But there's a side that is conventional, the side that is based on ego. So she's saying, let that side be cut so that only the devotional side will exist. So what I'm getting at here is that to move out of the category of atheism, whether it's philosophical or psychological, may not be as easy. It's not as easy as hearing in class and accepting with full heart that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. That's part of it. Yasya Vaishnimananam, Krishna Parama Purusha. That is certainly part of it. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and accepting Krishna as the Godhead. But then the implications of that hearing, the implications in terms of the instructions that are given, this is one reason why chanting is usually, chanting Hari Nams is usually more pleasant than hearing Shastra. Because when you hear Shastra, it comes with so many instructions. And the implications of those instructions are frightening. And whereas chanting holy name, you can have a, you know, have an experience like, wow, I really felt Krishna was, I'm not saying that that didn't happen, but you know, you get like, wow, that was ecstatic, and you feel that, I think I'm tasting prema, or, I mean, I've heard devotees say like this before, you know, you have like a really good experience, and like, that was ecstatic, okay, but that's not bhakti ecstatic, that's just like, you know, you were happy for 5 minutes during the high part of the kirtan before you space out in the next one. So the move from the category of, yeah, when we're giving our full self to Krishna Seva, where we're not taking the objects of this world as objects of devotion, that is not easy. It requires hearing, of course, and it requires the, it requires following through with the hearing process, with the instructions that are given. To Mamana Bhava Ma Bhakto Mamyaji Mamnamaskaru. So change our mental culture to Narayana Kalashanta. What is our mental culture? What are we thinking about on a day-to-day basis, on a moment-to-moment basis? So that is also supposed to be Narayana Kalashanta. Who are we serving? Narayana Kalashanta. Who are we talking about? Narayana Kalashanta. In this way, we're actually practicing Bhajanti, your mental culture, your speech culture, how you use your body. That is directed at Narayana Kalashanta, and not at the objects of the modes of material nature. So, again, the Prabhupada writes in the last paragraph, expanding on the Anasuyava point, the devotees don't have any envy of these other forms. If you want to do it, there is no problem also. But every choice, as we were just hearing, every choice has its consequence. So if you want to worship the forms of the gunas, that is also okay, no problem. But if you want to atma supersedity, then you have to direct your mind, body, words towards the forms of Krishna. So these are the ideas that I was able to make out this morning when I was reading the verse. So are there any comments or questions? So many Prabhupada disciples are here tonight.
Thank you for the wonderful class. We find that lots of people are attracted to the ghastly forms of the demigods. And they actually, you know, especially in the East, they're very much attracted to the demigods and worship them. How can you explain this in terms of being attracted to that and being attracted to the Vishnu tattvas?
How can we explain that in terms of what we mentioned already in 720 Bhagavad Gita, that because their knowledge is stolen by Kama, they're under the influence of a certain nature, pakrita niyata swaya. So they're attracted to the ghastly forms of demigods, that means they're in the mode of ignorance. Obviously, we may not want to explain it to them like that, if you're having to like talk to them personally. But basically, it means they're influenced by a certain guna. And according to the guna that they're influenced by, they choose a corresponding object of devotion. So if you're in the mode of ignorance, you choose an object of devotion who is congruent with that mode. If you're in the mode of passion, you choose an object of worship that is congruent with that mode. So all of us, are influenced by the gunas. Therefore, getting an opportunity to be attracted to something transcendent beyond the gunas is only possible by the interference of devotees. Because anyway, kamash taishta hitigana, all of our knowledge was stolen by lust from the very beginning of our birth. Itradvesha samutena dvanda mohena bharata. Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita. So if there is any chance to get attracted to something beautiful, which means beyond the gunas, there has to be interference with sadhu sangha. Otherwise, our natures will play themselves out. That is just the way that, as Mahaprabhu is saying, Durdhaivam Indrishami Hajini Na Anuraka. Due to bad daiva, I am not having attraction to the holy name of the Lord. Precisely because of his transcendence. If Krishna looked like cheesecake, you know, and we can taste him and we can touch him and so on, it would be a little bit easier. But because he's not having form of gunas, and we are in the gunas, Rupa Goswami gives that verse about why we're not getting attracted to Krishna. Sha Krishna Nama Charitadi Satapa Vidya. Because of the jaundice of ignorance, we're not getting attracted. So what can be done? Unless there is appearance of Vaishnavas, then there is no hope for anyone, actually. So their attractions just go on like this.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, so thank you for giving such a wonderful class. You said that you are nervous. So if you're nervous and you give such a powerful class, imagine if you were confident.
Maybe if I keep coming to Alastra, it will happen gradually.
Yeah. You talked about the modes of nature being in ignorance, you know, and so therefore you're kind of attracted to certain types of worship. It seems as though in some cases your innocence also, let's say for example one's upbringing, the whole culture was brought up in, let's say, these kind of a demigod worship, then this is what you were taught. You weren't taught anything different. So sometimes it may not be that you are in a mode of ignorance, but just that you're innocent, you don't know any better.
You can be in a mode of ignorance and be innocent at the same time.
That's yes. That also that sometimes you can be innocent and just doesn't know any alternative until you're exposed, let's say, by the association of devotees. So can you explain a little more on that?
I haven't really heard a concept in the Shastra of conditioned jivas being described as innocent, generally speaking. Of course, sometimes we have when we talk about the Madhyam Bhagavat devotee, then he has as his object of devotion, Krishna, Ishvara, and as his friendship, he has Tat, the devotees, as object of friendship. And then sometimes we say like this, the Bala, Bala actually means childish people or foolish people, he shows kripa. So you may think, oh, a child is innocent, but the child is also not innocent in an ontological sense. You know? He's innocent in a conventional sense, oh, so cute, you know, and they look chubby and cute and adorable, you want to hold them and kiss them. But then you're like, how did you get here in this material world? And then if the baby could remember and talk, he said, well, in my last life, this is what I was doing. And then, you know, if they tell you what they were doing, you go, ooh! And then you discover not so innocent. So when you look at child conventionally, you will say innocent. But if you look at it ontologically, how Krishna is describing the souls in the Gita, then no one is innocent. We are suffering from ignorance. Itradvesha samutena dvanda mohena bharata sarvabhutani samoham sargayanti panantuka. From the very outset of our birth, sargayanti panantuka, from the very as soon as we come out of the womb, Krishna says, sarvabhutani samoham, completely bewildered. Bewildered by what? The itradvesha samutena, the imprints of desire and hate, which are based on ignorance. So no one is innocent in the ontological sense. If you're taking birth in the material world, I think Prabhupada has described like this in SSR, the body is itself an evidence of our incarceration. It's like a prison. I guess when you go to jail, they put you in orange, not for renunciation, but you are put into the prison. So the body is itself a symbol of our turning away from Krishna, or having been turned away from Krishna. So no one is innocent. So I would explain it in the same way as I explained it previously. So this child is innocent, but in this particular guna, tamagun. So he's also intrinsically attracted to some deity, and also his surroundings may encourage that. And then, yeah, life goes on like this. Unless there's some intervention in with sadhu sangha, then it continues in this way.
Psychological atheism. can you stress a little bit more on it? I mean, you say sometimes we fall into psychological atheism.
I don't want to stress on it too much because it's depressing. I also suffer from psychological
atheism. But the term is somewhat new to us, really. When you said that most devotees fall into psychological atheism.
So philosophical theism is We accept Krishna as Bhagavan. Krishna Bhakti is a means to get Krishna Prema, the goal of life, by which he can be most satisfied. So we all accept that here. There is no difficulty. Krishna has given instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. We say we will follow them as Krishna's Bhaktis. We will follow what Krishna says. That is what it means to be Krishna Bhakta. You do what Krishna is saying. So Krishna gives the most confidential knowledge in Bhagavad Gita, the best of the Paramavacha, his supreme instruction, which are meant precisely for his devotees. And Ma Mana Bhava Ma Bhakto Ma Myaji Ma Namaskuru. So we accept this instruction also. So you think of me. So are we thinking of Krishna? Sometimes I think of Krishna. Got my little japa session. I mean, even during japa, you know, it's a tough battle. and then I'm supposed to talk about Krishna, talk Bhagavatam, talk Gita. But how do I use my speech? I gossip about devotees, or I'm gossiping about the material world. So that is not following the instruction. And when I'm thinking, I'm not thinking about Krishna, I'm thinking about sense gratification, I'm thinking about how I can manipulate this person so I can get my sense gratification. And then how do I engage my body in chasing after the objects of senses? So that's what we mean by a type of psychological atheism. We are accepting philosophically Krishna as our everything.
Many atheists said that there is so much suffering in the world, especially with children getting cancer and so many things. So how can they be a supreme and he's allowing all of this to happen? So one time I wrote that a child with cancer could have been a butcher in his last life.
Yeah, and probably didn't go over well, did it?
And the atheists were highly disturbed, you know, because
they
thought that...
Because they're innocent.
You know, yeah, they're innocent, you know, and how can I say such a ghastly thing about them, you know?
Yeah. You have to give people a little context. When we're talking amongst devotees, you may say something harsh, and we'll, as devotees, we'll say, anyway, that's our philosophy. But if you're talking to someone who has no context of these things, then we might be a little bit more prudent about how we use our words. Yes. Thank you all very much. Is there anything else? Any matas want to say anything? Yes.
Wait. Thank you for the class. It's been a long time since I've heard you do a Srimad Bhagavatam class. My question was about the material body. You were saying it's a symbol, and this is just like a technical point, but how should we regard when we see that the, you know, quote-unquote material bodies of our gurus and our spiritual masters and those acharyas that have come before us?
Yes, so this is mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you look at the Anchalila chapter 4, so Sanatana Goswami, he was wanting to commit suicide. He had gone through the Jarikam forest to get to Puri, and while passing through Jarikam forest, he drank some water that was contaminated, and he developed all these boils in his body, and pus was coming out, very nasty. And Mahaprabhu, when he arrived to Puri, Mahaprabhu would see him and embrace him, even with all the boils in the body. And this gave great pain to Sanatana Goswami's heart. How can my Lord, he has body of Shuddha Sattva, he's so pure, how can he embrace me? So he made strategy to commit suicide. And he wanted to, during Ratayatra festival, go underneath the will of the and be crushed and get liberation that way. Because Shastra says that if you are killed by the will or something like that, you get liberation. There's some statement like that. Don't get any ideas if you're having a low day. So he has an idea like this, and Mahaprabhu is Antaryami. He is super soul in everyone's heart. So he came to visit Sanatana Goswami. He was staying with Haridas Thakur at that time. And Mahaprabhu will come daily to see Haridas Thakur. So he came, and Mahaprabhu started directing his top monologue or speech, his chastisement at Haridas Thakur, saying he has given his body to me already and now he wants to commit suicide. This is not proper. Tell him, Haridas, tell him. Not to do this to him. Mahaprabhu was telling Haridas, tell him this is not proper. He's given the body to the guru. And then he begins speaking about, as a sannyasi, he is not to see duality. And then he begins going into how the body of the Vaishnava is actually spiritual. He says it's completely chinmaya. He says the body of a Vaishnava is completely spiritual. Chinmaya is the word that he uses there. It's been a while since I have looked at that section. But it's in the Anjalita chapter 4, you can see. It's around past the verse number, it's like 190. It's around that area, you can see. So that is generally how we see the bodies of Vaishnavas. We are advised by Rupa Goswami and the Upadeshamrita to be careful in our perception of Vaishnavas as sadhakas. Because he speaks about loving exchanges. You know this book, Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction. So in text 4, he says that we should do 6 loving exchanges with Vaishnavas. But you may have discovered that it's not easy to do it with everybody. Even if they're devotees. So that is okay. Rupa Goswami says we should associate with discernment also. Krishnati Yashagirita Manasatriyata. Some devotees you have to respect from a distance. And you know which devotees those are for you, I'm sure. And then some devotees, they receive diksha and they have proper sambandha again. Then you are to offer pranams to those devotees. They're properly serving deities, doing bhajan. And then those devotees who are bhajana vikna, they're like experts in bhajan, and their hearts are completely free from the tendency to criticize, then you should fully surrender to those Vaishnavas. And then, so we're to associate with discernment. But the thing with discernment is that it usually, sometimes it gets out of hand. You are also you're a scholar also, and many intelligent people in this room actually. And I'm sure all of you are intelligent actually, of course. because you have taken up Sankirtan Yajna of Mahaprabhu. But people who are conditioned with where their intellect is a little bit more element of their conditioning, that discernment thing is very dangerous. And the intelligence part usually tends to get the higher position over like just devotion. So to protect us from making too much discernment and thereby committing offenses, Rupa Goswami speaks text 6. Drishta svabhava janitarva pushascha doshaya. Now, pakrita tamiha pakta janashapa. This verse is directly to your question. He says, do not look at the devotees from the material point of view. Seeing their swabhava in there, vapu, and then swabhava janitar. Swabhava janitar means like their personality, their idiosyncrasies. Like someone eats and they smack when they eat. I don't know why I always give that example. I must have some imprint in the past where that like really irritated me. You like see some Vaishnava and you like can't even eat because you like and you pass some judgment because of that. This is called, that is just what Baba is like, or they talk very loud. You're like, why are you talking so loud? Yeah. When I was living in Chicago, the family he grew up in, they just talk very loud. They sound like they're yelling at each other. And when he would talk to the boys, he's like, "Hey, that's all I want to see." Like, "Why are you talking so loud? Chill out." That was just how he talked, and you find fault because of that. So these things are very dangerous. So Rupa Goswami advised, don't look at the devotees. Swabhava nirvapu. Vapu means like, you may think this boy looks a little funny. He's funny looking, or he has some defect in the Vapu, not taking that into consideration. Rupa Goswami says their bodies are just like the Ganga water. So the Ganga is pure, but if you've been to Mayapur and the Ganga, sometimes there is stool is there, foam is there, you know, dead body may be there. Then, you know, that's, it can really freak you out. You know, you like take a dip, come on, woo! You get really freaked out. And then you say, I'll never take bath in the Ganga again. That Ganga is... And then you start to commit offenses. No, the purity of the Ganga is not reduced because of these elements. So in the same way, the purity of Vaishnava is not reduced because of the swabhava, some defect in the nature, some defect in the vapu. So generally speaking, we are to look at the Vaishnavas as spiritual. That is a general advice. Especially, you gave the examples of very highly exalted devotees. But even in our association with each other, it is advisable that we see each other from the spiritual point of view. Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, he would say this thing that I really appreciate, that Vaishnavas, we have two sides. We have our inspired side as a Vaishnava, and then we have our human side. And he says, when you're looking at ordinary devotees in your day-to-day interaction, then you should take into consideration the inspired side of a Vaishnava and not the human side. Because the human side is part of prakriti, there's so many defects you will see. So as a general practice, it is advisable to see Vaishnavas from that perspective, even if they're not the most exalted. Because if we develop a mentality of seeing them materially in any way, then that will play itself out in front of real exalted Vaishnavas also, because you cannot see them with material eyes. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta will tell a nice story of trying to see the sun at night. Have you ever tried to see the sun at night? No one tried to see the sun at night. But there's a story where one king, he wanted to see the sun at night. So his ministers were getting to work. So one minister, candle lit the whole, city. Like, it must have looked very beautiful, but you can't see the sun by that method. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta describes one person, he was technologically very advanced, so he aimed some big lights at the sky. I always get the image of the movie thing. That also didn't work. So finally one minister says, you have some foolish ministers, you should fire them. Actually, you cannot see the sun at night. You can only see the sun by the power of the sun ray, which illumines the eye and then facilitates the vision of the sun. So you cannot see Vaishnava with your eye. Only when Vaishnava gives mercy, you can see him. Like this story there, fifth canto, Jatabharata is there. So Jatabharata, he used to have this strategy where he would just act stupid so no one would associate with him. That's a good strategy. A really effective strategy, His father would try to teach him different things, and he would do opposite of what his father said. They said, this guy is useless. So one time, one king was there, Rahugana. He was also a great devotee, Rahugana. But he was a little influenced by falsity. Not a little, quite a bit. Being the king, it's not so hard to get influenced in that way. So they were carrying the palanquin. They had employed Jatabharata to carry palanquin. But Jatabharata did not want to step on the ants, so he was like dodging the ants. Now you're holding 1/4 of the palanquin, you're doing that. So the king was getting a nice little ride. So he got upset, he was going to come out and chastise all the palanquin holders, and they all, it's this guy, the new one, the new recruit. It's him. And so Rahugana began blasting Jatabharata, using sarcasm. So, because he could not see that he was a Vaishnava. So then Jatabharata, out of his mercy, he began speaking to Jatabharata, to King Rahugana. Then King Rahugana was like, oh my God, you're a great Vaishnava. He offered obeisances, he apologized, and then he sought instruction. So you cannot see who is a great devotee with the eyes. So as a general rule of thumb, it's advisable to associate with even each other, just taking the spiritual side into consideration. Which means that, oh, they're chanting Hare Krishna, they are Vaishnava, they are spiritualists. Even their bodies are like spiritual. They're made of, they have 4 Avnarayan forms. There are verses like this also written in places of Shastra. So, all right, maybe last day. I don't want to keep people. I don't know. I don't know what the program is.
The word Muni was mentioned in the verse.
Krishna.
You mentioned the word Muni. From one of the verses, and Krishna mentions the same in Gita. It says, a thoughtful person can attain me without delay. Sometimes, though, there's an apprehension around being a thoughtful person because it could enter into speculation, and we already have the answers, so just accept those. So how to reconcile, or what does it mean to be a thoughtful person in the context of a faithful bhakta?
So in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this answer is given by Rupa Goswami. So when describing, there are 3 types of adhikar. Adhikar doesn't mean like, adhikar is in the realm of sadhana. So you can have uttama adhikar sadhaka, madhyama adhikar sadhaka, or kanishtha adhikar sadhaka. So the uttama adhikar sadhaka is described as shastra yukti chanipuna. He is very expert in scripture and logic. So the logic that is described is logic with taste versus logic with dry logic. So Jiva Goswami is giving this distinction there. So logic with taste is logic that is based on shastra, particularly shastras that describe the nature of bhakti. And logic without taste is logic that is not based on shastra, especially the ones that describe bhakti. So you can use your thoughts, we're encouraged to think, well, you should think about the Bhagavatam. Or your thinking should be informed by the Bhagavatam. I often like to say, especially when giving classes, but even when talking to each other about spiritual subject matter, ideally, no sentence should be unaccounted for. This is the ideal. Now, you have to be very thoughtful to do like that. But whatever sentence you're speaking, it should be accounted for. Like, if someone will question you, because sometimes you're giving a presentation, you say many things. So someone will zoom in on one sentence that you said, and then they say, why do you say like this? You know, these are just my thoughts. No, that's not counted. and Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 2, 117, it's a famous verse. Siddhanta Baliya Chaitanya, don't be lazy in discussing Siddhanta. So Srila Prabhupada said, presenting one's feelings and thoughts may be useful in the beginning to get someone to become a Vaishnava. He says, but afterwards you have to present Shastra in order for them to have the proper conception in advance. So the thinking is not frowned upon, but we have to think about Bhagavatam. Think with informed by the Srimad Bhagavatam, just basically. That's how it's written. And you're not very good at thinking, which may be true for so many of us in Kali Yuga, then you should hear from thoughtful person. So Hari Om Tat Sat. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.